Hi everyone, this is Exhibiting Kinship, a podcast dedicated to discussing Indigenous interventions in the museum world. My name is Felicia Garcia, I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Miranda Roberts, your other host.
Today we are so excited to have Courtney Little-Axe, who is the repatriation assistant at a museum in Tongva Territory or Los Angeles, California, as our guest on the podcast. So Courtney, if you could just start by introducing yourself, that would be great.
Veyashiv, Napivitan, Sekwonets, Wosta, Naheshive, Natista, Nanwopo Metanen. My name's Courtney Little-Axe. I'm Northern Cheyenne, absentee Shawnee. I'm glad you're all here and thank you for inviting me. I am from the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Lame Deer, Montana. I grew up in Busby, Montana. I'm the repatriation assistant at the museum.
This is so great. Thank you so much for coming and listening, talking with us today. And I know we all are graduates, quote unquote graduates of the Peabody Essex Native American Fellowship Program. So this is really cool to be able to talk to. Oh, well, I always talk to Felicia, but it's good to get to know you more, Courtney. So I guess I'll just go ahead and ask the first question, is to tell us a little bit more about your position and how you ended up there.
So I am the repatriation assistant, and basically what I do is I help return, sacred artifacts and things to tribes. So I ended up there through, actually, Felicia was the one that sent me the job announcement, not for this specific position, but there was a grant position that I had before, and that was the NAGPRA assistant. I applied on a whim and got an interview. Then I got a second interview, and then so I flew down to LA and did my interview in person, and that was my first time I had ever been to California. So when I got back, it was probably like within that week, they called me and asked me if I would wanted the position. And so then it was a quick turnaround. I think it was like a month later is when I moved to LA. I was just like, all right, I've been to California once, I'm going to move to LA. Should be fun. And so I had never, pictured myself living in a big city. And I ended up going to like one of the largest cities. So it was a good experience. And as of right now, I'm kind of just working remotely. I'm back in Montana. I just have been here since it's been a year now since I've been here. Which is wild to me because I had just planned on coming up for my little brother's state tournament in basketball. And then I just kind of got stuck here. So, yeah, it's been a good experience, and I'm so thankful that I was able to work remotely and continue to do the job that I need to do, or the work that I need to do.
Amazing. I also just have to note that Courtney came to my family's house on our reservation last Christmas, and my family was so excited to have her there. They always ask about her when I come home. And so I just love our PEM family. There are like so many great fellows that we have all connected with. And it's just like such a nice little community.
Yeah. I'm planning on coming to visit again once we can.
Yes, I would love that. They would love that. I don't know if I'll be there, but they would love that.
I'll just move in with them. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. That would be amazing. I'm sure my grandma would love to have someone to cook for. Okay, so you talked a bit about NAGPRA as you described your current position, but could you give a brief overview of NAGPRA for our listeners that might be less familiar?
Yeah, so NAGPRA is the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, and it was passed in 1990. Basically, what it does is requires federally funded entities to return sacred artifacts or items, cultural materials, remains, and items of like cultural patrimony back to their respective communities. And so I am under, basically my title is the repatriation assistant. So what I do is I help with like consultations, you know, setting up meetings and stuff with tribes so that we can come up with procedures and ways to care for these items. I don't like to call them items because they're more like relatives, like ancestors, you know? Mm-hmm. So when I refer to them, I'll be calling them like ancestors, which also includes, you know, human remains. And so, yeah, basically I set up these meetings to get a better sense of like what they would like to do and how they would like to move forward. So it's not just me. I have my boss is also, you know, she's in contact with them as well. And so we, you know, try to do our best in being accommodating to the tribes.
Can you give us a little bit more detail, like maybe of how an ACPRA came to be and why it's so important, especially in museums?
Yes. So I'll go all the way back to salvage anthropology. And so basically they were the, what do I call them? Settlers. Settlers. They came over and they were like thinking that we were going to go extinct. And so they started just gathering whatever material that they could get their hands on. And taking it and sending it back to Europe. A lot of our items are in overseas, which is, that's a whole other conversation of, you know, international repatriation. So they started building museums, and actually it started out as cabinets of curiosities, and they would have all these items just put in like glass cases and stuff, and then eventually it turns into museums. So they've had a lot of our sacred materials for generations. And basically, like, we were put on display as Native people. There was also like Native people that were like in museums, like what was his name? The one that was in California.
Ishii.
So like that. And so we were basically put like we were just objects. We weren't humans. So during the salvage like anthropology era, they just, you know, took everything, and it didn't matter if it was obtained under unethical, you know, standards and stuff. They just basically like just stole everything. So then up to, I think it was, there was a lot of people that were working on getting NACRA passed, and it eventually, I guess, was passed in 1990. But the one thing that really kind of bothers me is the fact that it was only passed because of the fact that it wasn't going to be a burden on the U.S. government to, like, provide funding and stuff to get everything home. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I guess, like, a overview of, like, how it came to be.
And why, I guess, and thank you for giving the overview, but I wonder for our non-Indigenous guests, our listeners, you can kind of go into detail about, as much as you can, I know some things are off the record or you can't really say anything, but, you know, how this kind of work plays out in a museum, like a day-to-day, or what a consultation looks like, and why it's, I'm more interested, though, I think, in the, why is it so important today? Why should they care about NAGPRA today?
I would say the reason why it's important is because we still are living cultures, and a lot of those items are still, we use in ceremonies. So just getting all of these items, a lot of the times they have sacred items in there that we have lost touch with as well. And so it's just kind of like, it's important for us to get those items back, because we are in an era now where we're trying to revitalize a lot of languages and, you know, ceremonies, and these items also assist in language revitalization. And so getting these things back to their respective communities also allows for just connection with those items. And it's just unfortunate that they've been sitting on shelves for so long that, like, when we view these, well, I know I'm not speaking for everybody, but when like people such as like my tribe, we believe that these items are still their living beings. And so they're just sitting on shelves, and it's kind of like sad. It's really sad because it's like they're living their life on the shelf, and it's not like they're not being used in these ceremonies and in cultural and sacred ways. Sorry, I'm kind of rambling. What was the question again?
No, and just, you know, if you want to give us like an overview of like what a, like the process, I guess, of repatriate or NAGPRA claims or something like that.
Okay, so basically tribes, like what we do is we try to do outreach, you know, we try to do as much consultation as we can. And I don't know, honestly, like, I don't know what I'm allowed to say. Just because, you know, I'm under like, it's like HIPAA, so it's kind of hard to like talk about. But I know like with in general, usually it's fairly still new. Like there's a lot of people that are still like putting in procedures and policies and stuff and developing these things, because even though NAGPRA was passed in 1990, there hasn't been much movement with repatriations, especially because some museums are kind of like not very willing to. And that's like, that's another thing that we really have to be cognizant of, because you kind of have to like move in a way that is, I guess, like walking the line between both the museum and the tribe. So we want everything to go back, but we also want to be just accommodating to both.
Right. I have been super interested in, I think it's called the Museum of Us, formerly San Diego Museum of Man, and their policy, which it's a recent policy, but it says basically that they are willing to repatriate objects that have made their way to the collection via a colonial pathway, versus just complying with, you know, the letter of the law. And I'm curious, I bet, like, as someone who is in this position, you are more aware of what's happening in the field in regard to repatriation. Do you think that's a trend? Do you see a lot more institutions moving in that direction where they are more flexible and more willing to work with tribes around NAGPRA?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think that just like the times that we're living in now, you know, where everybody's starting to acknowledge their racist histories, you know, and the dark pasts. And I think now is a great time for museums to start taking a look at themselves, you know, and really coming up with ways to be more culturally aware and sensitive to other perspectives. And I think it's, yeah, I see a lot of museums starting to now. And, you know, we've side projects wise, there's also things going on where, like, you know, some people from like our museum or like the field museum, you know, like people collaborating together to come up with like different ways of going about repatriations and kind of, I guess, building those bridges. I was gonna say repairing, but there has been never really a bridge between museums and tribes. So I think just like building those bridges and creating like more avenues and more ways to be more accommodating. It's such a good thing that's happening right now. And I think that there's people in these positions that are more aware of things, you know, rather than just having like a one narrow minded and one perspective of like the collections. Because I feel like in the past it's always been like I said earlier, that we were seen as objects, and like a lot of our sacred items were only viewed as art. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can appreciate art and everything, but what about like what they're used for? You know, some museums, they don't even know what these things are. So I feel like repatriation is definitely like something that needs to happen like tomorrow, today, right now.
Yes.
But it's gonna take, honestly, it probably will take more than my lifetime, you know, or our lifetimes to get everything back, because there's so much research that has to go into it and so much collaboration with tribes. And sometimes, you know, tribes don't even want to collaborate with museums, and that's okay. So there's, you know, obstacles that we have to, as museum professionals, kind of work around just to be more sensitive to tribes.
So from what I've experienced even at the field is the field museum is a lot of people don't even realize that there are human remains at a museum and the understanding of why. And I also don't think enough people realize that a lot of the burden falls on the tribes to come up with the quote unquote evidence that this belonged to them. And mm-hmm. I've seen museums be very accommodating and make creating new policies about long-term loans, you know, and mm-hmm. said like maybe they can't repatriate due to the law, but they have another way of doing things. Some museums don't follow, or they're just like to the book of like what NAGPRA is. And I think for me, the thing that's frustrating the most is that the tribe has to come up with the evidence, and then the museum is like the ones who get to decide the final say over like yes or no. And they don't really have to give an explanation other than what they feel is appropriate. So I guess it's like, how do we make, that's commentary, but also wondering like, how do we get those like stagnant institutions to begin to create the change that we all want to see with repatriation? Or what do you think that could look like?
Yeah, I think it's just so, I don't know, because these are colonial institutions, you know, and when we go in there and try to persuade them to give things back, it's like, it almost feels a little weird for myself to do that, you know. It's like, oh, I'm gonna try to talk you into it because it is mine. Like, I don't agree with the fact that museums have the final say, because even if you like explain to them, you could explain over and over of what it is or whatever, but if they don't feel like, you know, approving it or, you know, giving it back, then they can just say no, and then it's just like, okay, well, we're SOL, you know. I don't know, it's really unfortunate. But that's the reason why, you know, these positions are created, and natives need to fill these positions. But Felicia and I talked about this before too, of like how it feels to be a native working in a museum is kind of a little conflicting, just because you're like helping the museum, but also it's your stuff, you know, and you're having to do the work for them to give it back. But I guess it just goes with wanting to be in this field just for that reason.
To me, like, we constantly need to be advocating for NAGPRA, right? Whether we're inside the museum or outside. So it's like, what can we do to get those institutions that aren't as compliant? Is there something that really moves it forward?
Well, hopefully with Deb Howland in there. No, I was kidding. Well, I mean, and that's another like conversation too, about holding them accountable. And, you know, there's a lot of conversations that are like, what about the smaller institutions that are actually doing big work, or, you know, good work, and like actually trying, and versus like the big ones that are kind of going by the book. You know, there's creative ways that people need to come up with to repatriate. But I guess like the first step is just museums need to acknowledge the dark histories. And it's almost like we're going to have to persuade them that it was a dark history, because some people think it was good, you know, and they don't see it from from Native perspectives. So it's kind of difficult. I don't know if there's multiple ways that you could go about it, but I don't think there's just like one answer to that question. NAGPRA is like older than I am, but here I am trying to build the foundation to like return these items. So I guess putting it in that sense and that perspective is like, well, we're starting from ground zero right now, and we have to be creative with it.
Yes, I don't think people realize like what a basic level museums are at right now, that we are, yeah, literally starting at ground zero. And as you're talking, we could have a million episodes about this exact conversation. This whole podcast could be about NAGPRA and repatriation. So thank you so much for sharing. You started to talk a little bit about this just now, but I would love to hear, if you're willing to share, what it's like to be an Indigenous person working in museums doing this work.
It's tough. It's hard to be near, you know, these items and know how they were obtained. A lot of the times, actually all of the time, unethically. And as you get further and further into research, it's hard not to have hate in your heart for, you know, what happened. And it also takes a lot of self-care, mm-hmm. praying and cleansing, you know, and smudging. Being in these spaces it's a lot of the times it's heavy and you can feel it, but it's also rewarding, you know, seeing items go back to their respective communities is indescribable, just because, you know, you're helping tribes get items they haven't had since they were taken. I mean, well, obviously, but like haven't been able to put into ceremonies, you know, or taken into ceremonies. And it's just, I want to talk about a specific event that happened, but I don't think I'm able to. But it is rewarding. It's rewarding. And it's, there's like, you know, both sides of the fence where it's like, it's really heavy work, but in the end, it's, you're going to be able to see them go home. And that's like the biggest thing. That's the reason why I'm, you know, doing this work. And I feel like having an Indigenous person in these jobs is really important because you understand like the Indigenous perspective of repatriation. Whereas like maybe on to like the other people, it's just giving things back that belong to them. You know, they don't understand the sacredness of it or don't understand the importance or the use that, you know, that we want to, like we want to put these things back in the ceremony, or they need to go home. And some people just don't understand.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much for being so open. I'm like gonna unmute or mute myself over here because I'm like gonna start crying. Just hearing you talk is making me so emotional.
You start crying. I start crying.
It does take a lot out of you, but it also it can contribute to your whole self and well-being as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of up and down, a lot, like all the time. It's like, oh, we're going to give this item back. And then other times it's like, oh, we can't give it back because of this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then we have to find another way to, because we can't just let it stay here. We have to get them home. These are ancestors, you know, they're living on shelves for what reason other than just because they were collected. Like, yeah, it's really, it's, I'm starting to get emotional now too. I'm like, can't mess up my mascara. I'm just kidding.
I know. Same. And I'm thinking of it too, like when we're not able to give it back, but we're able to put them out on work with the community and exhibit these items, then it's up to the community, right? However that looks like, if sacred items are out or like what that looks like. But then how do we help our friends in different departments understand that it's okay for these items to live next to like live plants or the things mm-hmm. that they should have mm-hmm. access to, where they would a lot of the time already, right? Like one of my biggest fights has always been like with baskets is like they were meant to go back into the ground anyway. Like they were mm-hmm. never meant to just sit here for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. So I think repatriation can, like you're saying, the creative way can also extend to how they're shown to the public if the tribe approves it.
Yeah, and just care, like being taken care of. That's one thing that, you know, I think I can talk about is, you know, we try to do what we can to incorporate tribes and what they want for these items that are sitting on the shelves. I don't know, and sometimes what I like to do is like, if I go in there by myself, you know, I just talk to them because I know they're listening. And even like just playing music, you know, like play or, you know, just trying to help with that environment that they're in, you know, and trying to maybe like lighten the mood a little bit. And that's one thing that I'm like, they probably haven't even heard these songs in a long time. So it's, you know, it's like bittersweet.
One thing I always remember from one of my experiences is, as much as these places or as much as these spaces are like full of like really heavy and you're like really sad and emotional, like our ancestors also like to laugh and joke and tease. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to do that in that space too. It doesn't have to be so, I mean, however someone wants to feel, but it was like you're right, like why aren't we laughing more in here? Why aren't mm-hmm. we, you know, joking and teasing and all of that type of thing in these spaces too.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know, it just, with this work comes a lot of, like I said, it's very emotional. It's very up and down all the time. And sometimes, like, I get discouraged because I'm like, well, what if I don't, like, well, the work that I'm doing, I know it's contributing, but I'm like, I want to give everything back right now. Yeah, but just, I mean, being in those spaces, I feel really like I want to help, but also it's just like me just being in that space helps, you know?
Right.
And I am fortunate to work with people that understand. And so when things are heavy, a lot of times, like, those emotions, like I was saying earlier, is like the heaviness sometimes gets to me. Mm-hmm. And so I just like kind of have to go back to the office or kind of take care of myself to be in those spaces. And whether that's like smudging, whether that's praying, you know, whether that's just like going outside, getting fresh air, you know, it's important to also, like, for me to take care of myself, because it's a lot. It takes a lot out of you.
I think it's so important, like, what you're saying about having coworkers who understand and are supportive of your needs and, you know, how much self-care this work requires. Mm-hmm. What can we, both Native people and non-Native people, do to support this kind of work?
Honestly, there's no right answer. You could be supportive to your friends that work in the field. You could be supportive in, like, maybe going and visiting the museum, you know, or just even just like talking about it, striking up conversations about NACRA, because not a lot of people know that this work is going on. Mm-hmm. And so even just like talking about it in casual conversations, and really, I guess, bringing awareness to it. When I was working before I got into the field, I didn't even know about NACRA at all. I mean, I knew like a little bit just because I heard about it in a class once. But other than that, I didn't know that like that it was still ongoing. I was like, oh, 1990? So they must not have anything in those museums now, you know? And then My teacher was like, no, I think what she said was like the Smithsonian, they have internships. They'll have students come in and help them or, you know, give these items back and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, like I never put any thought into it. And that was probably when I was like a sophomore or something. Well, I went to Haskell before I went to University of Montana. So when I was at Haskell is where I heard it. And so it was probably like I think I was a freshman. And then it kind of stuck in the back of my brain. And I was like, at the University of Montana, I walked in to the anthropology department. I was like, do you have a job I can do? I'm staying here for the summer and I need a job. And so as I started telling them my background and stuff, I got a certificate in records and information management. And so they were like, oh, well, we have some records downstairs that you can go through. And it's like NACRA records. It's like NACRA from all over the state. So I was like, okay, cool. So as I was doing that and I was looking at, you know, sites and stuff, I was like, these are here. Like these things are here still. Mm-hmm. And so as I finished that project up, then they asked me if I wanted to help with the items. And I was like, yeah, of course. And so that's kind of how I just started down the path of repatriation. And then I was helping with we had a TIPO summit, Tribal Historic Preservation Office Summit, our officer summit, where we brought all of the TIPOs from across Montana to Missoula. And then we just like tried to come up with policies, you know, our procedures for repatriation. It was more motivating for me to see, you know, people in the field and to really hear their stories of repatriations. And some of them weren't good, you know. Mm-hmm. We were trying our best to, you know, get these items back. And I just was there for that. And it was fun. And it was, I guess that's what really put the, really lit the fire under my ass to get going. I was like, oh my gosh, these things are still in these museums. Why? It's just wild to think about like that journey and how I actually got into this. But I'm thankful. I'm thankful that I'm where I am now. And I'm helping and stuff. So it's rewarding.
That's great. And what about the people who want to do this sort of work or feel the calling? What kind of advice would you give them?
There's different avenues that you could take, I guess. Like, I don't know, I just walked into the anthropology department and I asked them for a job. So that's how I started. But I think there's a lot of different resources that you could go through and let me know. I was kidding. Email me and I'll try my best to help. But yeah, you could do different things. Like I started going to school for anthropology and then forensic anthropology. I graduated, or I went to UM and was able to graduate from there with my anthropology degree. And just being in those classes was more eye-opening, I guess, than anything, because they still talked about like the Bering Strait theory and stuff. So I was like, guys, this is not true. No, I'm just kidding. Right. But I just think that anthropology, like that whole field is changing now. And just especially with a lot of Native people getting into it and really shifting the narrative and the perspective. And it's beautiful. It's amazing. But I think just, you know, doing research into like scholarships and opportunities like internships and fellowships and stuff really help with going into the field. And unfortunately, well, now, like I said, it's kind of shifting. But unfortunately, a lot of the times it's only if you have like letters behind your name and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and which I think that's a whole other conversation, because they're like, I don't know, for myself, I always think about this, but I'm like, even if I have letters behind my name, I don't know more than my elders do, you know, right. And so why aren't they seen as experts, like PhD, you know, but the narrative is shifting. So hopefully we'll be able to just like, I don't know, essentially employ people that have, you know, cultural backgrounds like that or have grown up in it. They're the experts.
Right. I think we're almost going into the earring highlight, but not yet. I have one more question.
Okay.
And this will be tricky to answer because I understand that you are, you know, you can't say certain things because of your job, but I would just love to end this conversation on a high note and hear about an accomplishment that you are particularly proud of. If you can share generally without saying too many specifics, but also if you can't, I understand.
So one thing that I really, really, I love, because it actually was one thing. I mean, it helped me, I guess, continue on the path that I was on, was I found the origin, or like the, I guess where an item needed to go back home. And it was, I don't know, it was really just kind of random. I mean, it wasn't random because I prayed about it, because I was just in kind of like a low part of my life where I was like, I just want to go back home. I don't even want to be here. That's when I was at the university. And I was like, I can just go home and, you know, I'll be fine. I'll find a job there. And so I would go through these little periods of time where I just kind of like lock myself in my room and just not do anything. And so I was in one of those like episodes where I just had been in my room for days. And I prayed about it. And then it's kind of a long story, so I'm just going to say I had a dream. And then I was like, I don't know what this means. And my great grandma was in it. And I had never met my great grandma, or not my great grandma. I Googled my great grandma's name, and it just popped up with this picture of her. And I just like went down this rabbit hole of pictures. And I was like, okay, where's this at? So I looked online and stuff, and it led me to like this whole, like there was different folders for different tribes, and there was this guy that stood out to me. And I was like, I don't know what it is. There's something familiar about it, about him, or something he's wearing. And so then the next day I went to work and I was like doing data entry and I got bored. So I was like, okay, I'm going to look at these pictures. Don't tell him I said that because I was slacking off. I'm just kidding. But I was like looking, I was like, I'm going to pull up those pictures. And so I was like comparing it, this item, to like the one in our collection. And all of a sudden there was just like more and more similarities. And then I was like, no way is this the same one. And so anyways, I showed my boss and she was like, there's no doubt in my mind that that's like, that's not the same one. And eventually it was on top priority list to like return, to repatriate. And so I identified like where it was from, because we only had like very vague documentation. And then when I found that picture, it was like just tied it all together. So then we, you know, we were repatriated it. And that was like the my highlight of my entire life, my whole career. I was like, not even in the field yet. So that was, yeah, it was really like, when I say it's rewarding, it's like that, like, you know, I just happened to come across this picture and it was amazing. And I'm going to start crying if I keep talking about it. I was kidding.
I think that like just really illustrates why it's so important to have Native people in these positions. You know, there mm-hmm. is like a connection that exists there that is, I don't know, it's not comparable. So
yeah, exactly. And like we were talking about earlier, it's, I feel like just having that, it's not even a, like, you can't teach it, you know, you can't teach growing up in, you can't teach the same things as growing up in a culture. Mm-hmm. So having Natives with just that Indigenous perspective is important in those positions. And I think it's just repatriation. Like, I'm not saying that it needs to just all be Natives, you know, but there needs to be Natives that are a part of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is it time?
I think it is. Y'all have your earrings, so y'all go do your thing.
All right, Courtney, I'll let you go first.
Okay. So I just got these earrings. I ordered them a while back, but they went. So I'm at my mom's house right now, but they went to my house. So then I had them sit down here mm-hmm. just for this. But so I got these. They're pretty huge, but I love them.
Yes.
So I'm back.
Those are amazing.
And I got them from, she's a Dene artist and her name's Selena, but she does a lot of, or they do a lot of art, and I have been following them. I don't know how long I've been following them, but I finally was able to get my hands on some of the earrings. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Those are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I decided, because Miranda messaged me earlier letting me know that she didn't have her earrings with her, that I would just be super extra and wear my biggest pair of earrings. So these ones, I have to like lift them up so you can see the whole thing.
I love them.
I am obsessed with these earrings. They are made by Leah Matafrawa, who is also Chumash. I'm Somali Chumash or San Ynez Chumash, and she's from the Northern Band, but they are made in like more of a traditional kind of like old style. They're clamshells. And so they kind of like look like mm-hmm. what our shell money would look like. And then they have, one has like a little abalone star and one has a lightning bolt, an abalone lightning bolt. I love them. And Leah lives in New Mexico. And so it's just like really nice to have a Chumash relative here in New Mexico. Whenever I'm with her, it just makes me feel more at home. And I miss her because I haven't been able to see her with the pandemic. But yeah, you can find her on Instagram. Her handle is just her name, Leah Matafrawa.
Nice. I like those.
Beautiful.
I need to up my earring game because I don't know. I just need more. I don't know. I just need to buy more. I need to invest more into earrings.
I traveled to California and then I ended up staying longer than I thought. And so that's why I didn't bring anything. But I did tell Felicia, I was like, but I can't tell you what lipstick color I am wearing. Because a lot of people ask me that question. It is ColourPop's Lippy Stick in Goldie. So, and I have a lot more recommendations. But yes, that's what I'm wearing. And I almost bought more earrings this weekend, but I couldn't justify the money at the time.
I need to invest in also like Indigenous makeup brands too.
Yes.
Oh, same.
All right. Well, I think we are at the end.
Beautiful.
This was so great. Thank you so much.
I'm going to stop recording.
All right. Bye.
Bye, everybody.